the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
As they've said, my name is Megan. I'm a fourth year student and I've been a member here at Belmont since I was a fresher. I'll be honest with you all, when Simon asked me to do this, firstly, I was incredibly surprised. And secondly, his statement that I could speak from any passage on any theme did not particularly help me. Anything just seemed a little bit broad. Now, Samuel's already told you that my title is Waiting in Wonder. To continue the confessions, waiting was not my automatic go-to idea. In fact, I didn't have an automatic go-to idea. But waiting is what God has been teaching me about recently. And in the week I took to decide what to talk about, it just seemed to be everywhere. I don't know about you, but I'm not particularly good at taking hints. Particularly probably ones from God. In fact, he basically has to hit me repeatedly over the head with a metaphorical saucepan for me to get there. So it took me going home for the weekend to maybe start to grasp that this is what God wanted me to talk about. Now, I come from a Church of England background. I go to a traditional Cornish village church. Whatever your image of that is, multiply it a few times and you might be at around the madness. I am the youngest, average age, we'll go 89 and a half. We have people who arrive by boat every week and two dogs in the congregation. I love it, it is bonkers. And I thought when I went home it would be a great opportunity to have a little bit of fun with my vicar. You know the kind of thing, just point out that I didn't in fact have to have the years of ordination training to be able to stand up here and speak, and even better, I can do it without the special frock. Unfortunately for me, there was one major flaw in my plan. His response was, "Brilliant! What are you going to talk about? Because it's the week before Advent, so the obvious topic would be waiting." Seriously? So here we go. I don't know about you, but I hate waiting. But probably the thing I hate more is that Christian phrase, just wait on God. This summer, I finished 10 months living and working in Spain. And as that came to a close, I felt quite clearly I was starting a new part in my life. Sadly, it was to be a season of waiting. So, I waited for a day. And I went back to God and I said, "Okay, I've done my waiting. What's next?" "No? Really? Okay, well, I'll do another day." "Seriously?" "At a push, maybe I could make a week." "Really? Not yet? But Lord, waiting is just so boring. It's just doing nothing. God, you can't want me to do nothing." So if I'm honest, to my shame and to my detriment, I left it there. I walked away from the idea that God could want anything from me in a time of waiting. Because in my eyes, waiting was the same as inaction. Now, even as a first-time speaker, I know the good rule that a John Piper quote is the right way to go. So, John Piper writes, "Waiting on the Lord is the opposite of running ahead of the Lord, and it's the opposite of bailing out on the Lord." Now, this is the kind of waiting that we see in this passage and many others. So how does John wait? John declares right at the beginning that his very purpose is to wait. Be honest, when we were reading it, is that what you saw John doing? I know I didn't the first time. Surely he's just too busy. He's testifying. He's crying out. He's talking to the Pharisees. He's baptizing. That's not waiting. He's not sat twiddling his thumbs, gazing around, waiting for things to happen to him. But then, verse 15, he cried out, saying, "This is he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me because he was before me.'" The only reason John is doing any of those things is because he's waiting for he who comes after. The purpose of his every action is to wait for someone who hasn't yet come. John's waiting isn't private and silent, or as it often is for me, and maybe for you, grumpy and reluctant. John is shouting out for everyone to hear that he is waiting, that something is going to happen. Therefore, John's waiting goes beyond the personal. His waiting is so obviously something different, something out of the ordinary, that people are sent out to him to find out what he's doing. I love their questions, because they're not, "What are you doing?" but "Who are you?" There is something so distinctive about John in his waiting that it goes beyond what he does to who he is. In fact, in verse 21, they can think of only three possibilities. He could be the Messiah, he could be Elijah, or he could be the prophet. But John's answer is even better. "I am the voice of one calling in the wilderness. Make straight the way for the Lord." If someone asked me to describe myself, that is certainly not where I would start. But with that one sentence, John speaks back into the past of the Jewish people, a people who have received God's promises and have then waited. When Isaiah wrote this, they were waiting for promised freedom from exile. And as John speaks, they are waiting for the promised Messiah. But even the need for John to wait so differently, to proclaim that something new is happening, suggests that maybe as a people, they'd started to wait more like me. They're not waiting actively and eagerly, but passively and with few expectations. So what was different about John? Why could he wait so differently? The answer, I think, comes in the same verse. He was making straight the way for the Lord. John's waiting was different to those around him, and certainly different to how I wait, because he wasn't waiting for something to happen to him, for a situation to change, or for all his problems to vanish overnight. It wasn't what he was waiting for, but who he was waiting for. He was waiting for God. His waiting is active, edge of your seat anticipation, because by nature, waiting for God should be different to all other kinds of waiting. If we understand more fully who we are waiting for, we can't do it like we're stood at a bus stop or at the back of a queue. If we go back to Isaiah again, I think we see a very different picture of waiting to the one that many of us have probably developed. Isaiah 40:31. "Those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." This waiting is not the opposite of action. This waiting is living with God and being taken to new places, further than maybe we ever thought we could. Living life in God's strength rather than our own. It's the who we are waiting for that changes the waiting. And that's John. John is waiting for a God who he knew and worshipped and loved, but had never seen. He's waiting for God to come and bridge that gap between himself and his people, because that is what God had promised he would do. In verse 18, we see, no one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known. For me and for you, this has already happened. If you like, we are sat in a better position than John, because for all of our lives, that gap has been bridged. We can access God. Jesus has made the Father known to us, and then he has left us with his Spirit so that we can continue in relationship and closeness with him. But that leaves us with an obvious question. If that has all happened, why are we still waiting? If God has come and drawn close to us, and I believe he has, then surely our waiting is over. But then we look around the world, or maybe we look a little closer around our cities, our friends, our families. And yes, we see glimpses of the kingdom of heaven, but in other places we still see a distance, a gap that needs to be bridged, a space that cries out to be filled with this knowledge of God. So that is what we should be waiting for, more of God. Yes, we know who he is, but do we know what he's doing, what he will do, or when he's coming again? Peter writes in 2 Peter 3:11, 13, that as Christians, we ought to live in holiness and godliness, waiting for and hastening the coming of the day of God, waiting for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. That's far from an easy call. It clearly sets out that every bit of our lives should be filled with waiting for God and firmly based in the truths that Jesus has come and that he will come again. Honestly, on a day-to-day basis, am I living like that? Are you living like that? What difference would it make if we were? I'm not going to ask you for answers to those questions. Every single one of us will have a slightly different one. But I imagine there'd be common themes. No, if we're completely honest, we are probably not waiting every day with bated breath for the coming of God. But yes, it would make a huge difference if our waiting was always with those kinds of heaven-focused eyes. Then it would only ever be about waiting to see God rather than for things. If we waited with this expectation that God is present and God is acting, then we too will step into John's shoes. We'll start to wait in a way that points to Jesus. We'd wait noisily. We'd wait excitedly. If we look at verses 25 and 27, which read, "Why then do you baptize if you are not the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" "I baptize with water," John replied. "But among you stands one you do not know, He is the one who comes after me, the straps of whose sandals I am not worthy to untie. If, like John, we lived the truths of that verse, we would be living lives that make people question who, or maybe better, whose we are, and showing that our lives are not the purpose, but they are pointing to Jesus. That we deserve none of the glory, but have been invited into a position as children of God that we do not deserve. And most importantly, to those around us, that God stands among them. From Friday onwards, I think we have a great opportunity to do this. As I said before, I grew up in the Church of England, and one of the things I value in its incredibly rich tradition is the division of the year into different seasons. Each has a focus and a meaning. Each points to a different truth about God and the Christian life. I mentioned Advent earlier as well, and I guess we all maybe have a loose idea of what that is. It's those manic days in December where we eat too much food and barge our way through the queues to get Christmas presents. Maybe we open a window on a calendar to find that empty space that held the 24 chocolates that we ate on the 30th of November. This year for me, Advent is another step into adulthood. This summer, as I packed my things for university, my mum ceremonially handed over to me the Advent stable that I have had since I was two. I'm feeling the responsibility. But in the Church of England year, Advent is far beyond the daily opening of a window and the eating of a chocolate. It's not about the noisy office parties or the frantic buying of mince pies. Yes, it's the time before Christmas, but it's a quiet time of preparation and waiting that makes us ready for the birth of Jesus. So I'd love for you and me to collectively wait with anticipation and expectation for God this Advent. That like those little children who wake up on Christmas morning and run downstairs, we would be so excited about who God is and what he's doing, that we couldn't help but share that little baby in the manger on the front of your Christmas card didn't stay there. That he lived and he died and he was resurrected, and that baby is the creator of that world. For a good current example, that baby is the God of what we see on Blue Planet. He's more powerful, he's more beautiful, he's more breathtaking than the world that he has made. I think if you and I waited for Christmas and ultimately waited for God with wonder like that, then our waiting, like John's, would direct people away from us, away from our busy day-to-day schedules, and to God. To finish, as we go into communion now, and then as we leave through the doors, and on into whatever the week will bring us, why don't we openly and obviously wait with just a little bit more wonder for the amazing God that we have, in the firm assurance that the God that we are waiting for is working and will work, that he is here and he will return.